arrive. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today is February 3rd, 2026. And our top story this morning, oh, I just love this one. OpenAI is supposedly not happy with the performance of NVIDIA's chips, in particular as it pertains to inferencing, and that they're actively seeking alternatives. Now, in a vacuum, I guess this story isn't huge, but when you combine it with some of the headlines from yesterday, I can't help but have a Pavlovian response to this story, because it seems like Jensen and Sam are having a little bit of a spat, a little bit of a lover's quarrel via selective leaks to the press, all while playing nice and being like, oh, you know, passive aggressively, this is my best friend in the whole world. But if he wants to do something terrible, well, I guess we won't do business with his company. The story is breaking in Reuters here. And keep in mind, this is just after the story broke late last week that NVIDIA had gotten up and walked away from the table when this $100 billion capital raise that OpenAI is trying to do. In September, NVIDIA had announced that they were investing $100 billion in OpenAI. Of course, OpenAI had already announced that they were going to spend all this money on NVIDIA's chips. And Oracle was like, yeah, we're going to build the data centers for OpenAI. And everybody's like, hey, OpenAI doesn't have the money. Nobody seemed to really care about that, although slowly since September, they have started caring about that. So now we've got NVIDIA walks away from the table, says, no, we're not going to invest $100 billion. We never said we were going to invest $100 billion, even though they did. And now all of a sudden, OpenAI, via a selective leak, again, anonymously sourced, but supposedly multiple anonymous sources, all claiming now OpenAI says your chips aren't good enough. And apparently this has something to do with NVIDIA's decision to buy Grok or to license Grok's technology in a $20 billion deal that was announced not too long ago, because Grok was one of the companies that OpenAI was in talks with to buy the chips instead of from NVIDIA. So look, you know, full disclosure, you guys know me. I've been highly critical of this AI bubble for several years now. I'm personally short NVIDIA, so I can't help but get excited about this story. You know, when two narcissistic sociopaths start to not get along, it can be immensely destructive. See also Elon Musk and Donald Trump earlier last year. So Sam and Jensen starting to go at it. This has the potential. Maybe this is just going to like fan out and it'll be fine and it's a no, never mind. Or maybe these two are just going to keep going passive aggressively back and forth, leaking things to the press. And well, I can't help but be excited about that. Also going on this morning, gold and silver, the volatility continues. This time it's to the upside. We've got some big moves in metals happening this morning. Gold is up $300 last I checked to around $49.50. Silver is up roughly $9-$10, trading around $87-$88. Another $10 intraday swing for silver. Gold with $300 intraday swings. Metals are still volatile as all get out. Still not really sure which direction this wants to go. I get the feeling that we are going to see several such brutal sell-offs in gold and silver over the next couple of years, like we saw late last week, amid the context of a much larger bull move higher, which we're about a year and a half, 2 years into. I made this connection yesterday on the live stream that we saw some of the biggest stock market increases in history during the Great Depression, during the years following the stock market crash in 1929. Six of the top 10 biggest stock market moves in history happened between 1929 and 1933. And I think the inverse is true here. I think gold and silver are in the middle of a monster run higher, and I think we're going to see these brutal corrections along the way. As always, be careful on leverage. Also going on this morning, we've got Palantir stock is ripping on a big earnings beat. SpaceX is buying XAI. We talked about the rumor of this story yesterday. We've got confirmation now. Apparently the deal is done already. We reported this yesterday. It was like anonymously sourced. They're in talks to, are considering, that kind of stuff. No, this is done. SpaceX has bought XAI for the combined company will be worth $1.25 trillion. They valued XAI at $250 billion. Now, SpaceX is supposed to be going IPO later this year. They were going to IPO around $1 trillion. I don't know what effect this is going to have on it. That IPO hasn't actually been announced yet. What is this deal really, though? This deal is a bailout of XAI. That's what this is. SpaceX is a profitable company. XAI is a cash furnace, similar to OpenAI. All of the AI companies are in trouble here, guys. They are spending billions, tens of billions that they don't have. Wall Street no longer has this aimless appetite for AI debt. See also Oracle having trouble raising money, although that they're mixing that with equity and bond issuance now as well. So SpaceX is bailing out XAI here so that they can keep incinerating cash. The cover story is, oh, we're going to build data centers in space. Guys, they're not going to build a data center in space anytime soon. All right. Physics gets a vote here. That ain't going to work. All right. At least not based on technology and the current cost to put things into orbit. Maybe one day they do it. I hope they don't, because I'm not crazy about the idea of filling up low Earth orbit with space junk. That being said, it's a bailout. Also, Elon is in the news for a couple of things. Supposedly, XAI is hiring crypto bros to teach its large language model how to high-frequency trade crypto. So there's going to be wash trading in crypto. XAI's offices in France just got raided because of the sexualization of images and child porn accusations against XAI. Elon is all over the news today. South Korean tech stocks. Big rebound. We talked yesterday about how South Korean stocks were limit down. They threw the circuit breakers. They call it sidecar in South Korea. Big sell-off in tech stocks. A lot of volatility. Samsung, SK Hynix were leading the way down. Well, that flipped on its head. South Korean tech stocks had a big day yesterday. Samsung had its best day since 2008. You know, I can't help but note the similarity with the volatility in precious metals and the volatility in South Korean tech stocks. I don't know what has to break, what has to not work anymore for safe haven assets to trade in lockstep with high flying, high multiple Asian tech stocks. Something's not working here, guys. The two are kind of moving hand in hand. What else we got? ISM PMI rose unexpectedly yesterday, 52.6 for the month of January. That was actually the best number since 2022. Really good report. Not great. Still showing employment contracting, but new orders are surging. So some semblance of life for U.S. manufacturing. Right as that comes out, we've got a trade deal announced with India yesterday. 18% tariffs, down from almost 50%. In exchange, the Indians say they are not going to be buying Russian oil anymore. President Trump said some other things, like India was going to be working towards 0% tariffs for U.S. goods. We'll see if this deal stands up to the test of time. They're subject to temper tantrums and True Social posts, and we'll see. Right now, Prime Minister Modi has only confirmed the 18% tariff number. There hasn't been any confirmation about the Russian oil thing. The Russians say they haven't heard anything about the Indians not buying oil anymore. So who's lying, the liars or the liars? Maybe it's the liars. That's going on. But the one thing's for sure, the Indian rupee strengthened rather significantly on that news, all the way back to where it was trading at about 2 weeks ago. PayPal stock getting clobbered this morning, down big, lousy earnings, and their CEO has been fired. We've got Eddie Bauer is potentially going bankrupt here, possibly 200 stores closing. Private equity and the K-shaped economy strikes once again. Norin Chukin, aka Nochu, this one is interesting. They're taking a big hit from First Brands. There's a lot we could say about Norin Chukin and that bank. They were in big trouble a year or two ago. That is the fourth largest bank in Japan. There's a couple of things about that I think we got to point out. That is a name to watch in the months ahead. And last but not least, we've got the story about the spy chic and a very suspiciously timed deal with World Liberty Financial. If you didn't like Hunter Biden selling his art, air quotes, Hunter's art, for millions of dollars. And if you didn't like Hunter Biden's hedge fund cutting deals with Chinese conglomerates while hitching a ride on Air Force One, then you should not be happy about the spy chic buying $500 million worth of World Liberty Financial just days before President Trump takes office. We're going to talk about that one at the end of the show. Guys, we have a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button. You new guys, hit that subscribe button because we do this one every day. Come on back and have your coffee with the melon heads as we go through markets. And right now, the S&P is up by 11 points off the highs of the morning, but 0.17% higher. The Dow is in the red, off by 65 points or 0.11% down. And the NASDAQ is up by 110 points, 0.43% higher for the NASDAQ. I am sure Palantir earnings are having a big impact on this one. Strangely, NVIDIA still not reacting to this OpenAI news. That's kind of curious, but the market, you may have noticed, is somewhat biased to the upside when it comes to NVIDIA news. The DXY is a little bit stronger this morning, 97.66. That's higher by 5 basis points. And looking over at the bond market this morning, we have got yields are a little bit higher on the long end. The 30-year yield is at 4.928. That's higher by 2 basis points. The 10-year is at 4.295. That's higher by almost 2 points. Keep an eye on that 10-year. It has been creeping up ever so slowly over the last week or so, pushing 4.3 here. It has made a decent move over the last few days. The 2 years at 3.590. That's higher by 2 basis points. And the 1 month is at 3.683, off by 1 basis point. Looking over at Bitcoin, we are once again hovering kind of right where we were yesterday, 78,300, give or take. That's showing down by about 300 bucks, pretty much right where we were during the stream yesterday. Watch that roughly 74,400 level. That is support here. It was our low from back on Liberation Day. We bounced off that level yesterday. We break down below that. I believe we are heading into the 50s for Bitcoin. Looking over at the commodities board, metals are moving. They're just off the highs of the morning. Well, we've got spot gold is at $4,916. That's higher by 256 bucks or 5.5% higher. The high of the morning was $49.51. At one point, it was up over $300. April COMEX gold futures are at $49.41. That's higher by 285 bucks or 6.1%. Good morning for gold here. We'll look at the charts in just a second. My favorite of the shiny, silver. We've got spot silver at just under 87 bucks here. That's higher by $7.70 or 9.8% higher for spot silver. Big intraday swings once again. Look at this, a $10 difference between the high and the low of the morning. So yeah, it's moving in the right direction this morning, but that volatility is not done with us yet. March COMEX futures, pretty much the same thing, 86.96, higher by $9.93 or 12.9% higher. Again, a $10 intraday swing. Despite the volatility, I like the shiny. Copper is along for the ride this morning, 3.9% higher for copper. Platinum is up 5.8%. About $160 of volatility intraday for platinum. Palladium also higher by 5.9%. And crude oil's higher by about 1% this morning as well, 62.75 for March WTI futures. That's higher by about 65 cents. Let's just take a look at the chart here real quick, guys. This is the silver chart. All right, so let's put today's rise in context. Yeah, we had a $10 intraday swing and we're up big. We're pretty much right back to where we closed on Friday. All right, so even this recovery this morning, all we're really doing is making up for the additional losses that we took yesterday. The dip buyers have showed up. That is the takeaway here. It doesn't necessarily mean that we found our bottom. Could we be breaking higher here? I just don't know. The enthusiasm over in Asia has certainly returned. A lot of stories about people lining up around the corner to buy metals in Asia this morning. Also, gold, pretty much right back to where we closed on Friday. Again, you can see in the chart, even this big move this morning, all we've really done is undo the additional losses from yesterday in gold. All right, let's talk a little bit about this OpenAI story. Here we go in Reuters, an exclusive. OpenAI is unsatisfied with some NVIDIA chips and looking for alternatives, sources say. This one's just breaking this morning. OpenAI is unsatisfied with some of NVIDIA's latest artificial intelligence chips and it has sought alternatives since last year, eight sources familiar with the matter said, potentially complicating the relationship between the two highest profile players in the AI boom. The ChatGPT maker's shift in strategy, the details of which are first reported here, is over an increasing emphasis on chips used to perform specific elements of AI inference, the process when an AI model such as the one that powers ChatGPT apps respond to customer queries and requests. NVIDIA remains dominant in chips for training large AI models, while inference has become a new front in the competition. The decision by OpenAI and others to seek out alternatives in the inference chip markets marks a significant test of NVIDIA's AI dominance and comes as the two companies are in investment talks. Back in September, NVIDIA said it intended to pour as much as $100 billion into OpenAI as part of that deal. Of course, that's the story that unraveled late last week. And I have to wonder if OpenAI is like, NVIDIA, maybe we're not going to be using your chips anymore. Is NVIDIA going to continue to invest in OpenAI? It's hard to round trip your revenue if the money doesn't come back to you and it ends up going to somewhere else, in which case then NVIDIA would just be bankrolling revenue for somebody else. After the Reuters story was published, OpenAI CEO Sam Altman wrote in a post on X that NVIDIA makes the best chips in the world and that OpenAI hoped to remain a gigantic customer for a very long time. I love this passive-aggressive fighting that's going on between these two, right? Jensen says we're getting, or the story leaks, we're getting up and walking away from the table. And then Jensen's like, oh no, we want to make one of our biggest investments ever in OpenAI. We hope we can invest up to $1 billion or $100 billion. And then this story breaks. And then Sam is like, oh no, we love NVIDIA. We hope we can remain their customer. Boy, it'd be a shame if we couldn't remain their customer, if NVIDIA didn't want to, say, invest $100 billion in us. And NVIDIA's like, boy, it'd be a shame if we didn't invest $100 billion in OpenAI because they bought somebody else's inference chips. I just can't get enough of this story this morning. I absolutely love watching this. Seven sources said that OpenAI is not satisfied with the speed at which NVIDIA's hardware can spit out answers to ChatGPT users for specific types of problems, such as software development and AI communicating with other software. It needs new hardware that would eventually provide about 10% of OpenAI's inference computing needs in the future, one of the sources told Reuters. The ChatGPT maker has discussed working with startups, including Cerebras and Grok, to provide chips for faster inferences, two sources said. But NVIDIA struck a $20 billion licensing deal with Grok that shut down OpenAI talks, one of the sources told Reuters. So that's some anti-competitive behavior there from NVIDIA, buying Grok just so they can't cut a side deal with OpenAI to protect their own moat. I wonder if the regulators are going to have anything to say about that. But this is the second story in 3 days of this emerging spat between OpenAI and NVIDIA. I don't know if this is going to continue or are they going to start playing nice in the sandbox. All I can tell you is when two people with Godzilla and King Kong size egos start having it out in the press publicly, there is immense capacity for destruction. Meanwhile, we've got this very strangely worded story from Oracle. The NVIDIA OpenAI deal has zero impact on our financial relationship with OpenAI. We remain highly confident in OpenAI's ability to raise funds and meet its commitments. Why is Oracle just coming out and saying this and volunteering this? And why is the narrator in my ear saying, as it turns out, there was an impact on their financial relationship and OpenAI wasn't able to raise all the money they had committed to spend with Oracle? All I can tell you guys is this silly bubble is unraveling at the seams. Every couple of days, we're getting another story to this effect. And yet, the stock is barely moving. Look at this. It's actually up this morning. How is NVIDIA higher on this news? 0.5% higher, $186.63, up by a dollar after falling almost 3% yesterday. This market is still unashamedly biased to the upside when it comes to NVIDIA. Any good news, NVIDIA stock rallies 10%. Any bad news, the press circles the wagons and everybody's like, just buy the dip. Just imagine if the AI stocks start trading with the same kind of volatility that we saw silver exhibit on Friday. Just imagine what that would mean for this market as a whole. That's something to ponder. Oh, and again, full disclosure, I'm short NVIDIA. Meanwhile, we've got Palantir surges 11% after beating earnings estimates. Here's what's happening. That's pretty much the story there. Palantir surged 11% in pre-market trading on Tuesday after beating Wall Street's fourth quarter estimates amid rising spending on AI tools from governments and businesses. Shares popped the shares popped after it reported $1.41 billion in revenue, ahead of estimates for $1.33 billion. Earnings came in after a muted end of 2025. November was Palantir's worst month in 2 years amid a broader decline in software stocks over fears of an AI valuation bubble. The stocks ultimately rose 135% in 2025, but as of Monday's close, was down 17% year to date, so they'll be clawing back some of those losses. The company creates software and data tools for businesses and government agencies like the Department of Defense and the Internal Revenue Service and the Department of Homeland Security. CARP noted that the adoption of its tools by the U.S. government saw year-over-year 66% revenue growth. Palantir signed a software contract worth up to $10 billion with the U.S. Army in July and a $448 million deal with the Navy to accelerate shipbuilding production in December. And I remember seeing that story saying, what the hell does Palantir know about building ships? Besides nothing. Oh, well, people still bought the stock on that. Palantir's having a really good morning, though. Higher by 11.6% here, trading at $165 pretty much. Now, over the last year, the stock up 79% still. But you'll notice pretty much since November, the stock was on a downward slant. So this big pop this morning maybe helps them reverse that. We'll have to see how that one plays out. Meanwhile, Elon Musk's SpaceX combines with XAI at $1.25 trillion valuation. This one in Bloomberg this morning. The circular financing continues with Elon Musk's company buying Elon Musk's company. Elon Musk is combining SpaceX and XAI in a deal that values the enlarged entity at $1.25 trillion as the world's richest man looks to fuel his increasingly costly ambitions in artificial intelligence and space exploration. The acquisition of XAI was announced in a statement on SpaceX website, signed by Musk and confirming a Bloomberg News report earlier Monday. The deal gives SpaceX a valuation of $1 trillion and XAI a value of $250 billion. People familiar with the matter said the combined company's valuation was announced to employees in a memo on Monday. SpaceX said it acquired XAI to form the most ambitious, vertically integrated innovation engine on and off Earth, with AI, rockets, space-based internet, direct-to-mobile device communications, and the world's foremost real-time information and free speech platform. I couldn't help but notice information and free speech platform. Is X included in there? That's right. It is, isn't it? Didn't X buy XAI? So yeah, they're rolling it all up into one company now, apparently. The company is still expecting to hold an initial public offering later this year, one of the people said. SpaceX had been planning an IPO that could raise as much as $50 billion in what would be the biggest initial share sale to date. Guys, again, this is a bailout. This is SpaceX bailing out XAI. XAI is a cash furnace, much like OpenAI is. And these guys are getting increasingly creative with how they source capital to continue to keep this bubble inflated. All this is investors' value going up in smoke here. That's really all this is. Meanwhile, Samsung has their best day since 2008 and powers a South Korean stock rally. This is pretty interesting because just yesterday we were talking about South Korean tech stocks being limit down. Now it's the best day since 2008. See also metals volatility. A global rush to secure memory chips for artificial intelligence is powering a renewed surge in South Korean equities, with chip makers leading a rebound that pushed the KOSPI to a fresh record on Tuesday. Samsung Electronics jumped 11% on the Korean exchange, the most since 2008, while SK Hynix added more than 9%. Both stocks recouped losses from a previous session. The benchmark KOSPI climbed nearly 7%, extending its gain for the year to 25% and solidifying its status as the world's best performing equity index. Up more than 39% each this year, the chip duo have continued to set new records as investors embrace AI's voracious demand for memory chips. Despite the torrid gains, few analysts see them as expensive thanks to strong earnings momentum and still reasonable valuations. I don't know about the reasonable part. Trading is becoming more erratic as the chip makers extend last year's huge rallies. However, with daily news flow spurring investors to sell one day and buy the next, risk appetite rebounded in Asia as markets got positive tailwinds from solid U.S. factory data and a calming of the sell-off in precious metals. Sentiment had been hit in previous sessions as traders mulled the pick for Federal Reserve chair, along with ongoing worries about geopolitical tensions and the sustainability of the AI boom. misspelled bubble there. Korean stock volatility spiked to the highest since 2020 on Monday. So take a look at the chart here. You can see if we zoom in here, here's the big limit down that we talked about yesterday and how they, you know, the circuit breakers flipped, they triggered the sidecar. And then here we are today, right back up where we came from, heading towards all-time highs, up 6.84%, more than offsetting the losses from yesterday. Crazy volatility in Korean stocks to go nicely with your crazy volatility in precious metals. Meanwhile, we got the ISM manufacturing PMI yesterday. This one was pretty interesting, a lot higher than people were expecting. The ISM manufacturing PMI for the U.S. unexpectedly rose to 52.6 in January from 47.9 in December, a big jump, much better than forecasts of 48.5. The reading showed that economic activity in the manufacturing sector expanded in January for the first time in 12 months and the most since 2022, amid improvements in new orders, which had a huge spike from 57.1 to 47.4. Production went up to 55.9 from 50.7. Employment rose to 48.1 from 44.8, but you'll notice that employment number below 50. So it's still contracting at a slower pace. And supplier deliveries at 54.4, inventories at 47.6, that rose from 45.7, also still in contraction. So they're saying, though, employment and inventories remain in contraction. At the same time, pricing pressures were little changed at 59 versus 58.5. So inflation, tariffs in particular, still putting pricing pressures on the ISM manufacturing PMI. Although these are positive signs for the start of the year, they're tempered by commentary citing that January is a reorder month after the holidays, and some buying appears to be to get ahead of expected price increases due to ongoing tariff issues, said Susan Spence, chair of the ISM Manufacturing Business Survey Committee. So look, really good manufacturing numbers, but within a really good index, there's some things that are not so good, right? Pricing pressure is still really high, tariffs driving that. If you looked at what the managers were all saying in the survey, a lot of concerns about tariffs, a lot of concerns about the uncertainty of tariffs. And this big spike appears to be largely driven by inventory reorders. We saw last year, especially my friend Craig Fuller over at FreightWaves talked a lot about the freight recession last year, about how you could tell retailers and store managers around the economy were working down their inventory, selling down inventory because of the weakening consumer, uncertainty about tariffs. Those inventories got really, really low, and now everybody's reordering. So this could be a one-off is what that's saying. The other thing to note here, like let's zoom out a little bit on this chart to a five-year chart. Okay, this is the best number we've seen in a long time, 52.6. You got to go all the way back to the middle of 2022 to see a number like that. But it's also worth keeping in mind that manufacturing had been in contraction for several months, like 13 consecutive months. And that's despite all the efforts for reshoring in the trade war. You know, we've been saying on this channel for quite a while, guys, the pain from the trade war gets here way earlier than the benefits. All right. We're seeing the pain now. The tariffs hurt U.S. companies. They hurt U.S. employees. It takes time for the tariffs to work their way through. The uncertainty around tariffs, the flip-flopping, the tacoing, the back and forth, and the ever-changing narrative, that doesn't provide business the certainty they need to bring that manufacturing back to the U.S. And so it's probably going to be some time before we ever really see the benefits in U.S. manufacturing from the trade war, if at all, because 3 years from now, somebody else is going to take over and they might just totally redo the policy. But for now, Trump's surprise trade deal with India resets fractured ties. So we had some progress in the trade war yesterterday. India was the big holdout. President Donald Trump and Prime Minister Narendra Modi took a major step to reset fractured ties with a surprise deal on Monday to slash tariffs, bringing much needed relief to India's economy. The U.S. will cut its levy on Indian goods to 18% from 25%, lower than most Asian peers, while an additional 25% punitive duty tied to purchases of Russian oil was scrapped. Trump said Modi had agreed to buy $500 billion of U.S. goods, that's mostly a mix of energy and agricultural products, to cut its tariffs to zero, put a pin in that, and to halt crude purchases from Russia, a key demand of the U.S. president. Now, that cut its tariffs to zero thing, President Trump said in a Truth Social post, if you read between the lines, he said Modi had agreed to work toward cutting the tariffs to zero. So agreed to work toward, that sounds like a wink and a handshake more so than anything on paper saying India is going to lower their tariffs to nothing. It looks like the thing that we really got here was the $500 billion of purchases and the thing about the Russian oil. Now, the Indians have not confirmed any of those other details other than the 18% tariff. But the Russian oil thing makes sense to me because over the last couple of weeks, especially since the Venezuela blockade, we have seen a lot of tankers seized, not just tankers seized by the U.S. We've also seen the Europeans start seizing the tankers that are carrying the Russian oil all over the world. And so I think India probably read the writing on the wall and realized that Russian oil was going to get harder to come by. Might as well use that negotiating chip while you still have it because it's going away. And so the tariffs have been cut to 18% with the Indians agreeing to not buy the Russian crude that they probably weren't going to be able to buy for much longer anyway. Aside from the new tariff rate, Modi didn't confirm the details of the deal. And like Trump's other trade announcements, much could change. Taco flip-flopping. Yeah, we've all seen that. Even so, the agreement was hailed by officials from both sides and cheered by investors. The rupee posted its biggest gain in more than 3 years, and stocks jumped the most since 2021 on the announcement. Big strengthening of the rupee. We're looking at the USD-INR chart here. When you see this chart heading lower, that is the rupee strengthening. And there you go. You can see a big step change down in the rupee, 90.2 to the dollar, down from 92.1 yesterday. Now, while that is a significant strengthening, you'll notice we've strengthened all the way back to where we were on January 14th. So really only 2 weeks of weakening has been undone by this sudden surge of the rupee. But hey, at the very least, it's a sign of life for the rupee. And as a side note, it's worth pointing out that supposedly the deal has to do with them not buying Russian oil anymore. But I would also point out that one of the biggest stockpiles of rupees in the world outside of India is now in Russia because the Indians have been paying for their Russian crude with rupees. And so even though supposedly the deal is they're not going to buy Russian oil right now, well, this massive mountain of rupees that the Russians are sitting on is now worth more because of this trade deal. So it's not like this is all terrible news for the Russians, although it's not exactly good news either. Meanwhile, PayPal replaces CEO Chris after profit falls short of estimates. That story pretty much covers the whole thing, guys. PayPal reported earnings. They were not good. And the board of directors has fired the CEO pretty much effective immediately. The CFO is going to take over in the interim. They named another CEO who's going to come in starting on March 1st. Not good for PayPal here. Stock has had a bad couple of years, and it's getting worse this morning. PayPal's down 17.3% now, $43.26, off by $9. And look, that's after falling 41% over the last year. And zoom out 5 years, it's down 79%. PayPal has definitely lost its edge. It's basically the dinosaur of fintech. Not so good for PayPal here. Meanwhile, we've got Eddie Bauer Stores could close amid possible bankruptcy filing. That's pretty much the story. Shout out to my friends at MacroEdge is where I heard about this one this morning. Closing up to 200 stores, the K-shaped economy and private equity strikes again. More jobs lost, more vacant commercial real estate, more debt going bad, most likely. We're starting to see a lot of stories like this, guys, getting very frequent here. All right, now this one I want to talk a lot about. Notu to recapitalize a joint venture hit by $1 billion First Brands loss. Now, Notu, that is short for Norinchukin Bank, the fourth largest bank in Japan. Norinchukin Bank is discussing a capital injection into a joint venture that said its estimated losses from debt linked to First Brands has ballooned to almost $1 billion. The First Brands losses just keep getting bigger and bigger here. J.A. Matsui Leasing will book a 150 billion yen, that's about $100 million allowance, on the collapsed U.S. auto parts supplier, more than three times what it had set aside in November, the company said in a statement on Friday. First Brands unraveling in September has led to accusations of fraud against its founder, Patrick James, and his brother. In early October, J.A. Matsui said its wholly owned unit, Katsumi Global, had $1.43 billion in exposure to First Brands receivables at the time of the bankruptcy. The U.S. company filed Chapter 11 with just $12 million in its corporate accounts and more than $9 billion in liabilities. J. J.A. Matsui said it decided to book the additional loan loss allowance to recognize that doubt arises as to the probability of collection of the factoring receivables. In other words, it's a total loss, given the uncertainty over the course of the Chapter 11 process. Now, the reason why this is important, all right, Nochu's taking a big hit here. We don't know how big, up to $1 billion to recapitalize this joint venture. Now, the reason why I point to Nochu is because Norinchukin, at the end of 2023, they were in big trouble. After the banking crisis in the U.S., everybody was worried about Norinchukin's unrealized losses on U.S. treasuries and Japanese government bonds. All right, a lot of people speculated the bank was going to fail. Now, the losses on U.S. treasuries, they never went away, but at least they stopped getting worse. But the losses on Japanese government bonds have only gotten much worse. Japanese, especially long-term JGB yields, have continued to rise substantially since 2023. And anybody holding those bonds has been losing money. Now, Norinchukin told us in 2023 that they were going to be getting out of JGB debt, getting out of U.S. treasuries, and getting into CLOs, collateralized loan obligations. Now, that's important because collateralized loan obligations are getting clobbered right now from the 1-2 punch of U.S. commercial real estate losses and now all these worries about software companies, which are the biggest single segment within the collateralized loan market. We talked about that one yesterday. So Norinchukin Bank took a whole bunch of losses on U.S. treasuries, a whole bunch of losses on JGBs. They got even worse. And then they went and they hid in CLOs, which is even worse than that was. And they're taking a big hit from First Brands here. Keep an eye on Nochu here, guys. I suspect we're going to be hearing a lot about this bank in the months ahead. That one jumped out at me this morning. And last one of the day. This one's going to ruffle some feathers, probably with my own audience. But guys, you need to hear it. If you didn't like what Hunter did, if you didn't like the selling of Access, then you shouldn't like this one either. Spy Chic bought secret stake in Trump Company. $500 million investment for 49% of World Liberty came months before the UAE won access to tightly guarded American chips. 4 days before Donald Trump's inauguration last year, lieutenants to an Abu Dhabi royal secretly signed a deal with the Trump family to repurchase a 49% stake, not to repurchase, to purchase a 49% stake in their fledgling cryptocurrency venture for $500 million. That's according to company documents and people familiar with the matter. The buyers would pay half up front, steering $187 million to Trump family entities. The deal with World Liberty Financial, which hasn't previously been reported, was signed by Eric Trump, the president's son. At least $30 million was also slated to flow to entities affiliated with the family of Steve Witkoff, a World Liberty co-founder who weeks earlier had been named U.S. envoy to the Middle East, the document said. The investment was backed by Sheikh Tanun bin Zayed Al Nahyan, whom I'm sure I just mispronounced, an Abu Dhabi royal who has been pushing the U.S. for access to tightly guarded AI chips, which they got, according to people familiar with the matter. Tanun, sometimes referred to as the spy sheik, is brother to the United Arab Emirates president, the government's national security advisor, as well as the leader of the oil-rich country's largest wealth fund, which Sam Altman is now trying to raise capital from for his Stargate projects. He oversees a more than $1.3 trillion empire funded by his personal fortune and state money that spans from fish farms to AI to surveillance, making him one of the most powerful single investors in the world. The deal marks something unprecedented in American politics, a foreign government official taking a major ownership stake in an incoming U.S. president's company. And guys, there's no misinterpreting there. There's no taking that out of context. That is exactly what it sounds like. A foreign government official taking a major ownership stake in an incoming president's company. It's not hard to imagine that's trading Access. All right. What are they buying here? Are they really buying a stake in World Liberty Financial, or were they buying the right of the UAE to buy AI chips that had been previously restricted? Or were they buying, I don't know, export licenses for the F-35, which they still haven't gotten, by the way, but they've been requesting for years, and Saudi Arabia recently got. Either way, if you complained about Hunter, about him hitching a ride on Air Force One to cut this big hedge fund deal while he was blowing coke in the bathroom, and then he comes back with all this Chinese money? Or if you were complaining about Hunter Biden, the accomplished artist, suddenly selling millions of dollars of art to people who were seeking to curry favor with President Biden, if you didn't like those things, which I didn't, then you shouldn't like this either. This is some straight up bullshit. And don't worry. I mean, like, if President Trump is not worried about this, not in the least bit, because his political enemies spent all of their political capital prosecuting him for outright bullshit. And then when he goes and does something like this, the public has no stomach for it anymore because they've already spent that card on a stupid charge that went nowhere. And now he just feels like he's untouchable because he pretty much is. That sucks. All right. There's nothing good about that story, guys. And I'm sure I'm going to get all kinds of butthurt in the comments over that one. But you know what? Politics isn't a team sport. Call it like you see it, guys. Be honest with yourselves. And I just want to say thank you very much to NachoMan3086. He says, if you are short, Jack, when do you sell? Much, much lower. I can't give you a calendar date. I can't give you a number. I got to go by how the water feels at that time. And I couldn't tell you right now. Sharply lower. All right. My NVIDIA puts are sharply lower than their current price. Let me just put it that way. And they're also way out. Guys, I do that. I talk about my NVIDIA short, not because this is like a trading service, not to say follow my trades. That is just to CYMA. So I'm upfront with where my interests lie. Danger, do not follow me into trades. All right. I am standing in front of the most rip-roaring rally in stock market history and betting it's going to stop. That is a very risky trade, not for everyone. Thank you, Nacho Man, for supporting the channel, sir. Nashville Pasta Man says, Wall Street has two mistresses, AI and commercial real estate. Can we throw private equity in there and private credit in there while we're at it? Man, Wall Street is a slut. Anyways, the realities of balance sheet losses will force hand of AI losses. We're going to see reality impose itself. I agree 100%. And guys, you know, AI, everybody's like worried about the AI trade and there's all these videos about the AI bubble. Look at the stocks. They're still trudging along sideways at all-time highs. The sell-offs have not even begun. Oracle has sold off quite substantially from its highs, but the main players here, the hyperscalers, the Mag 7, NVIDIA, have not even begun to sell off here. And the news of the last couple of days has really been dreadful. If OpenAI is really, really on the ropes here and their relationship with Microsoft and with NVIDIA is really breaking down, then this bubble is effing toast. And that reality has not set in with the tech bros yet. Thank you very much, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. Brian Zarb, what's going on, brother? I haven't seen you in a while. Good to see Brian. Brian, who taught me TradingView many years ago. He took time out of his day to show me the ropes in TradingView. Good to see you, Brian. Thank you for supporting the channel. He says, open the gold and silver chart. Type it out and map the lower and upper channel. All right. Take care, Jack. Let's look at the long-term gold and silver chart. I'm going to set it to dailies, Brian, because I'm not really sure. I guess we got to re-shrink the melon here. Let's see if I can see what Brian sees. All right. We'll just look at gold and then let's set it to daily candles. Now, he said the gold and silver chart. Is that what he said? Did you mean the gold to silver ratio, the GSR? Let's do the gold to silver ratio. Perhaps that's what he meant. And he said zoom way out, which I have done several times. Now, let me read the message again. Sorry, we're kind of spitballing this here. Type out and map the lower and upper channel. Take care, Jack. I'll be honest with you. It looks like I don't see the channel we're talking about here, Brian. We've just taken a big step change down. Now, while we're looking at the gold to silver chart, there is something that I noticed the other day. We talked about this on my Patreon Zoom a couple of weeks ago. If we set this to, we'll say, monthly candles, and we zoom way, way out on the chart. All right. Now we're going all the way back to the 1940s here. All right. You'll notice that we've got a couple of particular timelines here. We've got substantially lower gold to silver ratio in the post-World War II era. By the way, that coincided with steadily higher and higher interest rates. And then we've got a roughly 40-year era of higher gold to silver ratio that coincides with substantially lower interest rates from the 1980s through the 2020s. And now all of a sudden, we've taken this big step change down in the gold to silver ratio. And the reason I talk about this one, Brian, is because I've talked about how I think we're into a new 40-year period of steadily higher interest rates over the next few decades. If that is the case, then the gold to silver ratio is probably going to spend more time below this red line, like it did the last time we had a period of sustained higher interest rates, versus above the red line as we spent most of the time for the last 40 years, which means for decades to come, silver should outshine gold. Sorry, I didn't quite pick up on the channels you were laying down there, Brian, but thank you very much for the super chat and for everything you've done for the channel, sir. Mr. 4Ps says, he gifted 5 memberships. Thank you so much, 4Ps. I appreciate the support of the channel. Welcome to the Melon Heads, you 5 new baby melons, you. Be sure and say thank you to Mr. 4Ps. Appreciate that very much. Oh, Brian said weekly. I think with weekly, you probably would have seen the same thing. Thank you, Mish, for that clarification. Welcome to the Melon Patch. Thank you, 4Ps, for supporting the channel. T.A. Chapman says, silver dead cat bounce or climb higher. Like and sub. Well, I can definitely get down with the last part of that message. I can assure you that. I'm not gonna make a call on dead cat versus heading higher, right? And a dead cat bounce would mean silver heads lower. I am hands off the panel as long as the volatility is going crazy like this. I'm not trying to trade it. Look, some of you guys might be skilled enough traders and good enough to make money on these intraday swings. I just want nothing to do with it. I don't want the blood pressure and the headaches that comes along with it. That being said, I think if you zoom way out on the chart, we're looking at steadily higher in metals for the next probably 2 to 3 years, at least probably longer than that. I think we're in the midst of a monster long-term bull run in precious metals for all the reasons that are sending interest rates higher over the next few years. And although typically interest rates are inversely correlated with metals performance, higher interest rates means lower prices for metals. I don't think that's the case here because, number one, a lot of historical correlations are breaking down. See also 6 Sigma, 10 Sigma events. But number two, the reason why metals are rising is because of a loss of confidence in sovereign government debt. And so those interest rates rising is money leaving the bonds and going to gold for safety. So that's why I think we're looking at long-term, substantially higher metals prices. But you got to be careful on leverage, TA, because I think these sell-offs, we're going to see several like this over the next few years. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Vandalay Industries, where I've always wanted to pretend I was an architect, says Bank of Australia hiked rates today after 3 cuts. A hike in Australia. That's interesting. I don't follow Australian monetary policy that closely. I am surprised to see anyone hiking rates here after 3 cuts. I don't know what inflation did in Australia, so I'd really have to go scrutinize the data. So I will say thank you for the tip, Mr. Arthur Vandalay. Appreciate the support of the channel. Mr. or M. Rocky or Mr. Aki, I'm not sure, is that the title? Or maybe the M is silent, Meraki. He says Trump's next mugshot won't look so smug. Spot on. I don't think there's going to be another mugshot. I don't think the public has any appetite for more political prosecutions. I really don't. And I think they spent that card already. You can play that once. And they played it on stupid shit. And now when he does something that is legitimately BS and highly suspicious and his son's selling access to him, which is what we criticize Hunter for doing, it's the same freaking thing. He'll get away with it now because he's already – what are they going to do? They already raided his house, impeached him twice over stupid crap. And now that he's done an absolutely corrupt business deal, he's going to get away with it because if they prosecute him again – forget it. The public's just going to be like, this is Banana Republic BS. And it is. And look, there's arguments on both sides. And this is why political prosecutions are fraught with peril. You need to have a very high bar for political prosecutions because when you prosecute petty crap, you prosecute everybody. And then it just becomes, do we like this guy? Don't we like this guy? Prosecute him or not based on politics, not on whether he committed an actual crime. Then if you lower that bar so much, it dilutes the waters. It makes the public not realize just how corrupt some of the other stuff is that is actually worthy of prosecution. So I don't think there's going to be another prosecution. I really don't. I think there's probably, as soon as the midterms are over, they're going to get to work on the third impeachment and nobody's going to give a shit because it's the third time they did it. So who cares what they do it over? There's no good outs here. All right. And all I would leave it with is we need substantially higher standards of what passes for leadership in this country. And that is something both parties can handle within their own ranks, without any whataboutism. The other guy's worse. No, your guy said this. No, you did this. No, you're a communist. No, you're a racist. Nice original arguments. How about everybody vote in their own primaries and get these corrupt a-holes out? So at the very least, when we get together once a year and have this Super Bowl of arguments, we can have at least tolerable choices that we can stomach on either side instead of the joke candidates we've had the last few times. And I do mean freaking jokes. The last election was embarrassing. Anyway, that's just my take. I got too political there. Thank you, Mr. Rocky, for supporting the channel. We are going to end this stream post haste. Thank you guys for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. I appreciate the super chats. Thank you for supporting the channel, as well as you magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out for the algorithm. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.